The royalty of college football is in assembly.
Oh my gracious,
yep.
How about that?
We just stepped on their face with a hot nail thinking rock for a nose.
Clinzo strikes with a minute and a half left. Holy Buckeye.
Michael Vick, amazing.
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. My name is Josh Parcell, founder of College Football Country. Visit the website, cfbcountry.com, the voice of college football fans everywhere. Thank you guys for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. If you are new to the show, make sure to follow me on Twitter at Josh Parcell. Follow the show on Twitter at cfbcountry. Really appreciate you guys listening, following along on the site each and every day. Spread the word. Leave a rating and review. 5-star rating. I was never a 5-star recruit, so the best I can be is a 5-star podcast. Thank you guys for all of your support. Today, my guest is Nicole Auerbach. She is a writer for The All-American. That's part of The Athletic. If you have not visited The Athletic before, it's a great subscription website, a lot of great access to some of the best sports writers across the country. Nicole, she's awesome. She's fun. She loves the Big Ten. She's a Michigan grad, but she covers the entire country. She has a great story that she's going to talk about at the end of the podcast that I want you guys to stick around for as well. But we're going to get into contenders and pretenders already 5 weeks into the college football season. And we've learned so much, but there is so much that we have yet to learn. We'll try and make sense of some of the teams that have shown some signs of greatness. We'll figure out whether or not it's for real or if it's a little bit of smoke and mirrors. So thank you guys again for listening. Please enjoy this episode with Nicole. Stick around. Coming up on Friday, we'll have our gambling episode, Take the Points. It will be with Todd Furman and Rossi Three Stacks as we get you ready for the weekend with all of the best picks. 24-11 so far this season against the spread. Not bad. Not bad. I'm starting to feel pretty good about myself. Even when we go 4-5 last week, that's our first losing week of the season. I'll take that over a month into college football. Thank you guys for listening. Now welcome on Nicole Auerbach from the All-American, the college football arm of The Athletic, the subscription website, doing great things this year. You can subscribe right now for about $5 a month. Had Nicole on a couple months ago, actually just about a month ago. We talked about 90s TV shows, 90s girls, all that stuff. So I had to have you back on. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more football this time, but Nicole, happy to have you back. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. We actually have some actual football that's happened, which generally helps. We have a little more to talk about.
Yeah, this is going to make our jobs a little bit easier. So we'll get right into it today. We're a month into the season. There's a lot of teams that we think we know. Like you said, there's football has been played, but we still don't know about how good some of these teams are. I mean, some teams we think are really good, and then we find out, come to say, oh, USC is actually not that great. Or, you know, there are other teams that may be better than we expected. So I wrote down a list of about 7 or 8 teams here. I want to get your thoughts, and we'll go back and forth, and just we'll play contender or pretender. Are these teams that are actual threats to make the college football playoff, or are some of these teams maybe a little bit of fool's gold? So I'll get right into it. We'll start in the SEC. Let's talk about Auburn. And they're 12th in the AP poll. They're 4-1. Only loss was to Clemson in week 2. That loss is looking better by the week. Jarrett Stidham starting to come around. He was SEC player of the week on offense last week against Mississippi State. What do you think about Auburn? I mean, they're playing in the SEC West, obviously Alabama looming at the end of the season, but what do you make of the Tigers so far?
Well, it is interesting. It's what you said, that loss, losing to Clemson essentially doesn't matter. It's a badge of honor essentially at this point. And it's interesting because it's sort of like how I felt, you know, let's pretend Florida State doesn't lose DeAndre Francois in the opener and they just lose a game to Alabama. Like, I don't think that hurts anyone to have that on your resume, just because so few teams are going to beat that team. And if you play them well, you play them tough. I mean, that's the best you can do. So, you know, I kind of never really was on the Auburn bandwagon in the offseason, never really thought that Jarrett Stidham was going to be the answer to all of their problems. And I'm still not there. I think in terms of actual college playoff contenders, I would not put Auburn in that category. But in terms of who is the best team in the West outside of Alabama, it's probably them. So I think, you know, they're a threat to Alabama, but they're not actually a playoff threat, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's kind of, I wrote down contender, but you really have to say pretender, honestly, the more you think about it, because they're not beating Alabama. That's the question with any team in the SEC. There are teams in other conferences that can make the playoff, but those teams don't have to go through Alabama. And as nice as Auburn is, I think here's my thing. You kind of said it really well, but Auburn is better than we gave them credit for coming off of that Clemson loss. They obviously struggled in that game. Sidham went down 11 times, but this Clemson defensive line is probably the best in all of college football. Mm-hmm. It was their second game with Stidham. He's obviously getting more and more comfortable every week. There was an article, I believe, on Alabama.com this week talking about how Stidham is the most, I guess, or the best dual threat as a passer and a runner, the best dual threat quarterback Auburn has had since Cam Newton. I mean, if you think mm-hmm. about what Nick Marshall was, I mean, he was genuinely just a running back playing quarterback, and some of the guys they've had since then have struggled, Sean White and Jeremy Johnson, obviously guys that weren't getting Auburn anywhere close to contending for the SEC. So yeah, I mean, in that sense, Stidham may be the best quarterback, certainly the most versatile they've had since Cam. I think Auburn's going to be very good. They may have the best chance of anybody certainly in the SEC West to challenge Alabama. But if you're asking me if they can make the playoff, that means they got to go through the tie. And I don't think they're going to win that game. So I would go pretender too.
Well, and there's just two quick points. I mean, when you talk about 11 sacks in one game, I mean, yes, Clemson's defensive line is probably the best in the country, and that's terrifying. And I don't want to go up against that, but also, if you are an elite team, you can't give up that many sacks. Your offensive line right. has to be better than that, even in week two. So that's just, you know, when you're talking eye tests and things that the selection committee are going to look at. Plus, the other factor here is we haven't seen two teams from the same conference make the playoff yet. But I think that the way that you're most likely to see it, and it was actually interesting because I was at the college football mock selection last week, and we did the 2012 season. We actually had two SEC teams in the playoff. And obviously, each season is different. We were doing 2012, and Florida ended up in the fourth spot over Georgia, even though Georgia had beaten Florida. Georgia was in the SEC championship game where they almost beat Alabama. But Florida's resume was stronger. So basically what I'm saying is I personally believe, and my experience, the mock showed it, that in order to get two teams from the same league, the best shot is at getting someone else from your division, not a team that you're going to beat in the championship game, a team that their only loss is to you. Like, let's say, you know, if Michigan had gone undefeated but then lost to Ohio State, and then Ohio State goes to the championship game, Michigan, you know, has a good shot. But in this case, yes, it's a loss to Clemson, which we're giving them good credit for. But at that point, you're if they lose to Alabama, that's two losses. That's not the team that's going to make it in as a right. second team from the same division first time ever. So right. that's just I don't see even that scenario working out for Auburn.
Well, okay. So off of that, I agree with you in theory that, you know, you need to be in the same division. It can be your only loss. But I also would say this, we'll skip down my list and talk about a team who I think could be in this position in a couple months, Georgia, in the SEC mm-hmm. East. Now, Georgia right now, they're ranked in the top 10. They obviously have a couple big wins. They're number 5 in the AP poll, beating Mississippi State, then beating Tennessee. I look at Georgia's schedule. Now, Auburn is the big one for them, ironically, in about 5 or 6 weeks on the road. Georgia may go undefeated. For sake of argument, mm-hmm. If they go undefeated and lose to Alabama, I think they have a great chance to get into the playoff if that's a 12-0 team. Obviously, it depends on what else happens around the country. But let's back up for 2 seconds. What do you make of this Georgia team? Are they for real, or do you think they've beaten up on a couple teams that were, obviously, in Tennessee's case, overrated, and Mississippi State maybe as well?
Yeah, but like it's not even that those teams were that overrated entering the year or the week that they're playing them. It's the way that Georgia won the game.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, with Jake Fromm, true freshman stepping in, they've got these great running backs. Like, all of the pieces were there. But my big question entering the year was, you know, I mean, is Kirby Smart a coach that I want to, like, go to bat for here? We haven't seen Georgia not overachieve, but, you know, they get rid of Mark Richt for hitting a ceiling every year, and that's sort of where they were. So is Kirby Smart the coach that can get them out of that? You know, they have the talent, they have the skill players, and so they really impressed me. Not just that they are 5-0, even though they've been dealing with, you know, a quarterback injury and having another guy step in as a true freshman, but also that they have won. Like, the Notre Dame game was not the prettiest game, but you got that out. You win the game in South Bend, you know, and that's Jake Fromm's first start. And he didn't play great, but he won the game in South Bend. And then to beat Mississippi State, to win at Tennessee the way that they did, Like, these to me are just very clean showings, like clean performances. They look good on both sides of the ball. I just really like what I'm seeing. The question is, and I do agree that that would present a really interesting argument if they do go undefeated and then lose to Alabama in the championship game. What that looks like compared to the other teams that are like vying for that fourth spot in the playoff. But you know what, a couple things that are going to matter here is that like Florida doesn't fall off and that they're right. able to beat them. You need Notre Dame to like have a decent rest of the season still. I mean, they seem to have turned a corner a little bit too. So you need some of these other games, these other teams in the SEC that is kind of viewed as like, maybe it's just Alabama, drop off Georgia, and then huge drop off everybody else. Maybe Florida's in there. Mm-hmm. You know, you need the middle and bottom to kind of pick itself up a little bit so that the resume looks stronger. That's a thing that I think could end up coming to play for Georgia.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And here's another thing, and we're going way down this rabbit hole now, but in this situation, if Georgia's undefeated, they play Alabama. Now, Alabama and Clemson are going to be battling it out for 1 and 2 all year. I think mm-hmm. Alabama's going to ultimately stay number one. They're number one now. I don't see the games left on Clemson's schedule that would convince the committee or the polls to put Clemson ahead of Alabama, but you never know. But let's just say Alabama's won at the end of the season, Georgia goes in undefeated, and Georgia loses. Not only are you trying to debate whether or not to include Georgia as a runner-up in the SEC, you know, comparing resumes with some other conference champions, you're probably debating whether or not to put them in at number four. And mm-hmm. that would mean a rematch with Alabama in the playoff. Now, there's a committee going to sit there and say, are we really willing to put Georgia back in and give them another shot in a game that they just lost in a neutral field? I think that right. is where it gets real, real tricky when you start thinking about putting two teams from the same league in, because if you're trying to set up a rematch, or if it looks like it would be a rematch, I think the committee is going to give the benefit of the doubt to somebody else. It's a lot like what happened with Michigan and Ohio State back a few years ago when Florida made it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, and again, like, I'm so curious to see how, and obviously at some point we will have two teams from the same league, and I'm just so interested to see how that happens and yeah. like what it looks like. Because, you know, I mean, it would just be so strange, not only for the rematch factor like you're describing, but also that someone's last game of the year was a loss like that. Yeah. You know, and even if it was the best team in the country, I mean, there's just so many interesting questions that would come around that. That's why I just sort of think it's going to be like we were thinking last year, the Big Ten East, you know, if that's what we think is maybe the best division, then the runner up who didn't even get to reach the championship game because they got blocked by somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's essentially how Ohio State got in, except Penn right. State didn't also get in.
Right.
So
you're right.
You know, so it's that philosophy. But again, like, we don't know until we've seen it. And it was really interesting doing 2012 at the mock, because that Notre Dame also took a spot. So ultimately, yeah. even though you're not doing this by conference, we had Notre Dame had a spot as an independent, two SEC teams, and then we had Stanford. So only the Pac-12 and the SEC were represented, which was kind of crazy. If that happened, we'd immediately go to 18 playoffs right now.
No question.
We can't have that many leagues left out. But yeah, it was just sort of strange, even in a hypothetical, to go through that.
Yeah, seriously. Well, let's talk about the Big Ten East. Ohio State, they are mm-hmm. 10th in the AP poll. They lose to Oklahoma. They're 4-1. That loss to the Sooners coming at home in week two. But look, they have absolutely not been tested since the Oklahoma game. They played Army. They played Rutgers last week. I mean, just a complete cakewalk. UNLV also in there. JT mm-hmm. Barrett's touchdown interception ratio, 13-1. But look, there's obviously a lot of questions around if he's able to, you know, be the guy that can get them back to the playoff. I don't know. I kind of like this Ohio State team. If you look at the national champions over the last few years, they've lost to Pittsburgh, Ole Miss, Virginia Tech, which Ohio State lost to Virginia Tech at home by 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people wrote off Ohio State after that game by the way they played. In reality, I mean, you said it earlier when you talked about Auburn, like you can lose a game, it's okay. Do you think this Ohio State team, based on what you've seen though, I mean, is this a team that can still reach the playoff like we thought they could before the year started?
So technically, yes, because to your point, it's a non-conference loss. It doesn't ultimately matter, especially if Oklahoma stays like in the playoff picture. The question is, or my gut is, that Ohio State is not going to make the playoff, that Penn State has too much offensive firepower this year that I just can't see JT Barrett, who, again, yes, he looked great against Rutgers. He threw 12 passes and five of them were touchdowns against UNLV. He needed this stretch and Army to right himself and get confident again, because after during the Oklahoma game and after, he was so, the confidence was shot, and there was all these questions about should they change quarterbacks and this and that, and Urban's gonna ride it out. He's gonna go JT Barrett all year, I believe. It's his guy, is one of his best, is one of his favorite players he's ever had. So to me, that puts a ceiling on how good their offense can be, because it limits the vertical passing game, which is not a problem against certain opponents, especially because Ohio State is great up front defensively and they're going to limit stuff. I just think when they're going to go up against Penn State, that's going to be a loss. And I think that they're not going to be able to keep up, and therefore that puts Penn State in the driver's seat to get to the playoff. So to me, I've just completely shifted gears after seeing that Oklahoma game in person. I had been waiting for Ohio State to show me why, you know, preseason I was like pretty much all in and thought JT Barrett would finally kind of regain that passing game. But I don't think they have. They technically have a path to the playoff, but I think Penn State is going to put a stop to that.
Well, that's certainly going to be the game everybody has circled. And I'm a little bit higher on them than you are, because I mean, look, if Iowa can go toe-to-toe at home with Penn State, I think Ohio State can. And everything you said is true. Penn State has absolutely more firepower on offense. Just Saquon Barkley alone is better than anything Ohio State has to offer. Mm-hmm. I think the matchup of Ohio State's defense against that Penn State running attack and Saquon Barkley is going to be one of the best matchups of the year. Think about what gave Ohio State trouble in that Oklahoma game. It was mostly the vertical passing game, the mid to deep passing game. Penn State has a balanced offense, and McSorley obviously has been tremendous. He engineered the game-winning drive against Iowa. I don't know if they can beat Ohio State through the air. Barkley's going to have a huge game. That's far from impossible. But I think Ohio State has the personnel on defense that can hopefully try and slow Penn State down and play a similar type game to what Iowa did and hope that they can win. I mean, I think Ohio State's very good. They get Penn State at home. Trust me when you know as much as anybody, they're going to want revenge from what happened last mm-hmm. season in Happy Valley. It ultimately is going to come down to that game. I think Michigan's good, but I do think that Ohio State and Penn State are the two best teams on paper in that division. And I think Ohio State has a shot. If they can get through that game, I think the winner of that game ultimately makes the playoff. So it's going to come down to whether or not you think is better, Penn State or Ohio State. You like the Nittany Lions? I think it could happen.
Yeah.
That's going to be a hell of a game, though.
Yeah, and I think you're also right that Michigan can throw a wrench in here, because you know, I think that overall, and I think statistically, they're a better entire defense. Like, I think Ohio State is the better line, but Michigan's entire defense is young but super talented and super fast. Like, they're just everywhere, and so I think that they will present some big problems for Penn State. And that game is, I believe,
Happy Valley
in State College. And then I also think that, you know, we were talking about strength versus strength, the Michigan Ohio State game could end up like 6-3. Like, I don't have a ton of faith in either of these offenses going up against really good defenses. So, like, if Michigan splits those games, like, you could really throw a wrench into things. But I'm not entirely sold on them. I just have so many questions offensively. Although John O'Korn is getting a start against Michigan State, and he looked really good against Purdue. So, you know, if they can turn around offensively, they get in this mix here. And they kind of, you know, I would err on the side of going Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State. I just, like, completely gone off the Buckeye bandwagon.
After
the first couple weeks of the year, and, you know, beating Rutgers will not necessarily get me back on it.
So nobody's buying drinks for you in Columbus the next time you're in town. I think that's safe to say.
Well, they also know I'm a Michigan grad, so that doesn't usually happen anyway.
So you're biased. That's what it is. You hate Ohio State. No, no one. That's what happens, though. Especially if you're a Michigan fan. No, you're never going back to Columbus. Oh God!
I actually really like Columbus. They've got great restaurants, great people, great bars.
Yeah, just a horrible football team, apparently.
Not a horrible I love JT Barrett. I want him to be better. But no, yeah, it's. I've been to Columbus more than Ann Arbor in the last like 5 years, which is kind of crazy. Which also is like, Ohio State's been very good, but just kind of funny.
Yeah,
I've come around on it.
All right, well, how about the team that beat Ohio State? Let's talk about Oklahoma. They're third in the AP poll. Now, after that win against Ohio State 2 weeks later, they struggled with Baylor. who is, what, 0-4 now? That game was, you know, a letdown game. It happens. You know, you're not going to play your best every week. But I just wonder how good this Oklahoma team is. I'll get to my thoughts on the Big 12 in a second. I'll kind of open it up to you. Baker Mayfield, along with Saquon Barkley, they're kind of 1-1A right now, it seems like, for the Heisman race through 4 or 5 weeks. What do you think of this Oklahoma team? Do you think that they are capable of running through the Big 12, making it to the playoff, which would be a nice end to Baker Mayfield's career?
Yeah, I think he's having kind of exactly the season I thought he would. I mean, he's a two-time Heisman finalist, so he's going to have a good year, which is such a luxury for Lincoln Riley in year one as the head coach there. But, you know, one thing that I'm keeping an eye on and really jumped out at me with the Baylor game, because Baylor's not very good in any area right now, but especially offensively. And they gave up a lot of points to Baylor. And so, you know, after the Ohio State-Oklahoma game, you know, you've got Lincoln Riley and Mike Stoops getting in there and saying that the defense is so much better. And, like, yeah, you could talk about Baker special, but, like, also their defense. And then, you know what, maybe it's just more of a fairly run-of-the-mill Big 12 defense. Like, if you're giving up that many points to Baylor, I'm a little concerned about that side of the ball. But I do think that most days, most games, their offense is going to be fine, and Baker Mayfield will figure it out, even though he's got, you know, new receivers out there, new backs to hand the ball off to. I don't know. I mean, it's just so hard to tell. And then TCU kind of throws a sprinkle in now after what they did to Oklahoma State. It's just, for me, it's so hard until these games are played to figure out how they match up when one team like a TCU, like, actually has a defensive identity and yeah. The other ones, like, say that they do or say that they're improved that way, but these games end up going a shootout anyway. So it's hard to, I'm not sure how I read the Big 12. Plus, they're also going to have that rematch potential in a championship game. So I feel like they still have a lot of opportunities to kind of eat their own.
We're right on the same page on that. We agreed on everything on the last podcast, so finally we're starting to – this is like, we just start to – as the podcast goes on, we start to match wavelengths here, because I totally agree. I think the Big 12 champion is going to have two losses. I think there's a lot of really there's a lot of good teams in the Big 12. I think there's five. I would even throw, I mean, Texas is kind of hanging on there at the very end of those contenders I would put in the Big 12, but there's five teams in that conference I think that could – easily all win the league. I mean, I think Oklahoma's very good. Oklahoma State, TCU, obviously in that top group. West Virginia is very good. And then you got Texas. I mean, Kansas State is not a pushover by any stretch, although they've been a little bit worse than I thought they would be to start the season. There's plenty of teams in this Big 12 that can, like you said, eat their own. That's what worries me about Oklahoma. I mean, you summed it up perfectly. I just think all these teams are very similar. I don't think that Oklahoma's defense is any better than West Virginia's, or I mean, certainly not, I don't think, better than TCU's. And not to mention the fact that schools like Texas Tech all of a sudden looks like it has a little bit more of a pulse. That's a team we didn't expect to, you know, be much of a threat to the top teams in the league. All of a sudden, it looks like, I mean, yeah, there's six or seven teams that can beat anybody else. And when you've got a style of play in that conference that's so hectic and so volatile, you just have to imagine there's going to be some upsets and some games you didn't see coming. So I like Oklahoma. I like Baker Mayfield. I just don't see anybody in that league getting out alive, certainly undefeated, and maybe with one loss, but it would not shock me if you got a couple two-loss teams. Not to mention what you mentioned, too, they have to have a rematch in the championship game, whoever wins that league. I think it's going to be really, really tough for anybody in that league to make a run. I actually think the Big 12 gets left out again, which probably not going to make anybody happy over there, but I don't see anybody in that league making it. So let's move on. Pac-12, Washington State. Now, they obviously had a huge win on Friday night, a game that a lot of people kind of saw coming. They were a short underdog in that game, but a lot of people really liked that upset pick. They beat USC 30-27. They're in the Pac-12 North, which is kind of a tough division to figure out. You've got some teams that have looked pretty good at times, like Oregon and Cal. Obviously, Oregon lost its quarterback. You got Stanford and Washington looming towards the end of the season. What do you make of this Cougars team? I mean, this is probably the best team Mike Leach has had since he's gotten to the Palouse, but do you think that they can build on the momentum of the USC game, or do you think that will kind of be the high point of their season?
Well, it's interesting because the part of the reason that they were a popular upset pick is because they actually are much better defensively than they usually are, than Mike Leach teams usually are. So yeah, you know, you're getting the air raid offense, you know, Luke Falk's going to put up a ton of points, but you actually have to make some stops. And the fact that game, like is a 30-27 game against Sam Darnold. Yes, he had a bunch of offensive linemen out, and that team is super inconsistent around him. He's had a ton of luck, bad luck throwing interceptions this year. Still, I think, you know, that is what makes this Washington State team different than these other teams in the past that have had their flickers of, you know, potential or upsets or whatever. I mean, obviously, first of all, this team did not lose to an FCS team. So we're already on a
progress.
Different wavelength than normal for Washington State the last few years. But it's interesting because going into the year, my colleague at the All-American, Chantel Jennings, who's covered the Pac-12 for the last few years, she said, and I'll mark her words and I'll give her all the credit on this, that she thinks the Apple Cup is going to decide the Pac-12 North. And, you know, you're going into the season, you're like, oh, but Stanford, and, you know, now we're seeing Bryce Love, and how did they lose two games already? And, you know, you want to believe in maybe someone challenging Washington, but they're kind of all back too. Jake Browning's still there. They're going to be steady. They're going to be quiet. But you know, I love Dave Shaw, and I wanted to err on the Stanford side. So that was going to be my, like, you know, little bit different pick in the North, right? Mm-hmm. But now I think she's right, because I think, you know, it doesn't seem like this is a flash in the pan for Washington State. Washington isn't going anywhere. That game is at the end of the season, and it just sort of feels like now we're just going to spend the next month and a half leading up to, like, a very impactful Apple Cup.
Yeah, I mean, that Pac-12 North has actually been a lot of fun so far. And Stanford, mm-hmm. I mean, kind of, I think the Washington State conversation kind of runs through Stanford, because we know the Washington game at the end of the season is going to be huge. But I guess, are they even going to get to that point? It's because, like you said, Stanford has two losses, but Bryce Love is playing extremely well. That end of the season stretch, they play Stanford at home, then Utah and Washington. I actually mm-hmm. think that Stanford's still the better football team. I think that David Shaw, traditionally, those teams get better as the season goes on. Remember a couple years ago, I think they lost to Northwestern and then rattled off a bunch of wins.
Body clocks. That was when we learned about body clocks.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That was the first time we'd ever heard that. That's right.
Yeah.
So I think Stanford's a little bit better. And I think that their style of play with Bryce Love is going to make it really, really hard for Washington State. You just have to look at the way the schedule lines up. If they played Stanford in 2 weeks and then Utah like 3 or 4 weeks later and then Washington a couple weeks after, I might feel better about Washington State, but they've got to play those three games in a row at the end of the year. I think that's really, really tough. And look, Mike Leach, I love the guy. He's never won, or he's only won 10 games one time, and that was the Michael Crabtree team at Texas Tech. Now, he hasn't had a great defense most of those years. He's also had to, you know, do a rebuilding project at Washington State and at Texas Tech when he first got there. So he only had a few years of really opportunity where the team was even talented enough to get close. I just think this is the type of team that loses some games, even with a better defense. I'm going to sell Washington State with the, like you said, I'd love to. It'd be great if the Apple Cup came down. We thought it was going to be Oklahoma State was going to be the big rivalry in November that might decide the playoff. How great would it be if the Apple Cup was one of the biggest games in all of college football this season? I don't think it's ever been the case in my life.
No. And, I just love the name of it. So I'd like it to mean something. I mean, sort of like how and I know this is another team on your list that you want to talk about, but like Miami, how everyone's been wanting like Miami, Florida State to be bigger than it has been the last few years and be less lopsided, and they want these teams to meet in the ACC championship game, and it's like you can will and want all of these things to happen, but like it never works out the way it's supposed to. Like what you're saying about Bedlam. For like 2 weeks everyone was super excited about Bedlam this year, and now it's like, nah, that may not matter.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about Miami then. They're ranked 13th right now. They've only played a few games. Obviously, the hurricane kind of derailed the month of September mm-hmm. for them. So a little bit of unusual start to the season. They struggled against Toledo in their first game back. But then they go into Duke, and I think Duke's a pretty good team. And Miami beat them 31-6 on the road. I don't know. What do we make of Miami? They play at Florida State on Saturday. That's that big game. But Florida State doesn't have its quarterback. So now how challenging is that game for them? They're listed as a 3-point favorite on the road to get through that game. The Coastal Division looks like they could be the best team. They just had Amon Richards back. I mean, there's a lot going on in Miami, a lot of mm-hmm. positive things, a lot of things that would make you think this is the year Miami could be back in the mix for the for a college football playoff spot. Do you think this is the year?
Well, so this is where I'm going to go, kind of what we were talking about with Auburn, that – yes, I think technically there is a path for them to get there, but I don't see any team outside of Clemson coming out of the ACC. Yeah. And I just think, I mean, Miami has not made the ACC championship game since there's been divisions and they've had it and they've been in the league. So that would be a huge milestone and like step in the right direction for them. And they don't want this to be like a 1 year thing. They would want to sustain it. I just think that Clemson, what we're seeing now, and it's become a little bit boring, to be honest, over the first month of the year, is that Clemson and Alabama are just like head and shoulders above everybody else. And yeah. So to me, it's just Clemson. I just can't picture anyone in that league in either division, in particular the Coastal, just because it's been so up and down over the last few years and kind of anyone can beat anyone. But I just don't see Clemson losing or even coming close to like losing that cushion that they're going to have at this point. Like their resume is so much stronger than everybody else's. Three top 15 wins already. I mean, I just cannot, even in like an upside down world of Stranger Things, whatever type of mindset, cannot picture them losing a game to someone in the ACC. Like I'm literally probably not going to watch much of Clemson over the next month because I've seen what I need to see out of them, right. And like I know they're an elite team. So it's just sort of like I just don't, like, even if Miami is quote unquote back, I don't think that level is close enough to Clemson's level.
Well, the thing about Miami that I've said for a long time is the only time Miami's been relevant nationally is when they've had so much NFL talent and first, second round picks that they've dominated. It doesn't even matter what they do Monday through Friday. I mean, they've just had literally Hall of Famers on their team.
Yep.
And since then, if they don't have that much of a talent advantage, they haven't been able to win. They haven't won the conference. They haven't even won their division. So I agree with you there. I think that Miami historically has been susceptible to letdowns. I actually think that they could probably contend with Clemson. I was in Blacksburg for that game on Saturday night, and Virginia Tech just doesn't have the offensive playmakers to keep up with Clemson. Defensively, they were great. Other than a blown coverage and a pick six, I mean, Virginia Tech held Clemson to 17 points. The defense played pretty well. It was just that they didn't have anything on the offensive side. I mean, there was no chance they were going to be able to go toe-to-toe with the Tigers on offense. But Miami has some playmakers. Mark Walton is better than anything Virginia Tech has in the backfield. Amon Richards is as good as anything Virginia Tech has at receiver. Miami's got some skill guys. Now, Malik Rozier is off to a decent start at quarterback. He has, I believe, 8 touchdowns, 2 picks, but again, want to see the competition level rise, see what he does against Florida State. I think if Miami makes it to the to the ACC championship game, I actually think they could give Clemson a run. The problem is why I'm selling on Miami is because they're going to lose a game at some point in the season that's going to keep them from getting to the playoff, even if they still win the division. They play Notre Dame and Virginia Tech back-to-back weeks later this season. They get them both at home, which is great, but I haven't seen a Miami team that has avoided an upset for over a decade, so I don't know why they're going to start now. That's pretty much what it comes down to in my mind.
They're going to lose at least one or two.
Yeah, that's
like,
I mean,
it would also be very Miami of like everyone kind of seeing the stars align and then not even to make the championship game.
Well, as a Virginia Tech fan, I hope that's the case. But also, just I always see it for Miami, and I see it for Mark Richt. Mark Richt did this at Georgia how many times? So I know everybody.
Well, they would get to the SEC title game. They just wouldn't win it.
Well, exactly. So
either way.
Yeah, either way, I think you're right. One way or another, I don't think Miami ultimately gets there. This is a good team. They got plenty of talent. I'm not sold on them actually being back to the playoff, I guess I shouldn't say back to the playoff. They've never been there, but you know what I mean, back to as a top five team. Last team I want to talk about, Nicole, I'm going to skip TCU. We kind of touched on them. We talked about the Big 12. Let's talk about Notre Dame. I love this Notre Dame team. I haven't
really.
I don't know why. Well, if you think about it, they lost by 1 point to Georgia, who looks outstanding right now. I mean, it's kind of funny how we've all kind of turned our backs on Notre Dame after that loss. I think the biggest problem Notre Dame has right now is that Brian Kelly can't get out of his own way with the media. I mean, they have kind of all of this negativity has been swirling around Notre Dame since really, I mean, the end of last season. And then it carried over into the postgame presser after Georgia, and people have kind of just ignored what Notre Dame is doing. Notre Dame is pretty damn good. They've got maybe the best offensive line in all of college football. They've got Adams at running back, who is averaging almost over 130 yards a game. Equanimeous St. Brown is one of the best wide receivers in all college football. NFL scouts are drooling over the kid. Brandon Wimbush has been excellent as a runner. He has, I believe, 6 touchdowns already on the ground. This Notre Dame team has a lot of talent, and the schedule is not that overwhelming. Not like what we used to see with Notre Dame, where it seemed like they played a top 25 team almost every week. It's kind of funny that Notre Dame's 22nd in the AP poll. I think they're pretty good.
Well, first of all, you can thank the ACC for part of the reason that the schedule's not like that.
True.
I'll just point out that, and this is as of when we're recording this, which is today Tuesday, correct?
Yes.
Tuesday. That Brandon Wimbush is day-to-day, and he's dealing with an injury. So that really does impact the way that this team looks. And he might play Saturday. I mean, he might be fine. But, like, I was seeing on Twitter that people were reporting that he was on crutches. And to me, that's a concern because he does do a lot for that offense. And I agree with you that they're kind of floating under the radar because of the post-game debacle at Georgia. And then, you know, Michigan State is an improved Michigan State team. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still think, like, maybe it's a 6-win team, but I think it's a bowl-eligible team, which is still double the 3-9 from last year. So that's still an improved. And I was surprised at the way that they went in there and won that game handily and didn't even, you know, it wasn't even in doubt. And so that impressed me with Notre Dame. You know, it's just so hard to get behind. I'm just not nearly as high on them as you are with the coach. Like, it was so frustrating these last few years that whenever anything would go wrong, Brian Kelly blames his players, or he blamed his long snapper once. And it's just like, you got to take some accountability. And I know he's made some coaching changes. You know, he has hired different coordinators. He's done different changes. But I think that one thing that's just hard for me to get behind this team is because all offseason we hear, oh, it's a kinder, gentler Brian Kelly. Right. And then it's not. And then I'm just tired of that narrative. And so I think you're right with this point that, like, he and this media storm that he creates around the program kind of take away from what they're actually doing, which is they are a much better football team than they were at the very beginning of this year already. But to me, I can't get past all the other stuff around it. It just bothers me too much, and I can't focus on the good that they're doing on the field, except to say, like, they are definitely better than they were week one, which is what you want to be this time of year.
Yeah, I think the media has created this narrative that Notre Dame is out of control, that, you know, like you said, Brian Kelly's done all these things. Brian Kelly could be a jerk, and Notre Dame can still have a good football team. And I don't get wrapped up in stats all the time, but according to ESPN's FPI, which obviously they haven't heard what Brian Kelly said in the media, they have Notre Dame ranked 10th. They have him as the 10th best team in college football. And I genuinely think they are among the 10 to 12 best teams in the country right now. I look back to that Georgia game. Now, the game was in South Bend, but let's be honest. I mean, that was basically a Georgia home game. There were more Georgia fans right in the crowd than there were Notre Dame. But nevertheless, I mean, let's just call it a neutral game. Notre Dame stood toe-to-toe in that game, and it wasn't pretty for either side, really. But Georgia has blown away some decent football teams since then, and Notre Dame was able to take them down to the wire. Even if Wimbush misses this week, they play North Carolina on the road. First of all, Nicole, I think you could play quarterback this week. They'd beat North Carolina. I think the Tar Heels.
Yes, I think that North Carolina is the team that I could beat as a quarterback.
You probably could. So then they have a bye week before USC. So there's some time for Wimbush to recover from whatever's bothering him. If he's healthy going into that USC game, they play NC State the next week at home. The rest of the schedule is Wake Forest at Miami, Navy, Stanford. Obviously they have to win out, because with one loss, they're not going to even threaten the playoff with two. No doubt about that. No question. Even with one loss, it's going to be tough. I think this team is a contender, though. I just think we've turned our backs on this team too early, and there's a ton of talent left on that roster. If Brian Kelly can stay out of his own way, it wouldn't surprise me to see Notre Dame go on a little bit of a run here. And you know how we get in the media. If a team starts getting hot, we'll fall in love, especially if it's Notre Dame or if it's Texas or USC, we're going to fall in love with them all over again. I think that may be the case with Notre Dame if Wimbush can stay healthy. And that's a good point you brought up. So we just agreed on something. This is good. We're getting more healthy debate. It's about time. So that's all the teams we talked about, contender, pretender. I did want to talk Alabama Clemson a little bit, but, you know, we're running out of time. So I just want to skip right ahead to the story that you wrote this past week. And that was a story you wrote about Jerry Kill, who's now the offensive coordinator at Rutgers, former head coach at Minnesota. And if you've been following college football for quite a while, you know he's the coach who's been battling health concerns for a long time. He's had seizures, both on the field, off the field. And when he left Minnesota, I think a lot of people, and you talk to him, I'll open it up to you, a lot of people didn't know if he would ever coach again. And sure enough, he's resurfaced at Rutgers, and it seems like he's going to coach until they literally have to drag him off the field. So tell us a little bit about that story, how it came to be, because I think it's really fascinating, the kind of access that you got and what you learned spending some time around him.
Yeah, it was a story that I had been wanting to do as soon as I saw that Chris Ash had hired Jerry Kill, because A, I didn't expect to see him in coaching again. And, you know, as it turns out, a lot of Jerry Kill's coaching friends didn't think that he would be coaching again, or maybe that it was what's best for him health-wise, because he'd been doing really well after he stepped down in Minnesota midseason. And then into last fall, he worked as an administrative role with K-State, and he was living, you know, very close to where he grew up in Kansas. And, you know, he was working out, he was eating right, he was sleeping, all these things that are really hard to do correctly when you are a football coach. And so it's funny because, you know, of all jobs that you could potentially take to come back into coaching, one of them that might be the most stressful, which is not good for someone who's trying to take care of themselves, is like an offensive coordinator at Rutgers. It's a position that has been very much a thankless job for much of the past decade. They've had a lot of different coordinators, a lot of different quarterbacks. They also now are in the Big Ten East, and you're going to be going up against Ohio State's defense and Penn State and Michigan and these teams all the time now. So it was interesting. Obviously, you know, Jerry Kill had coached in the Big Ten. These teams aren't unfamiliar to him. But it is a huge undertaking. And so, you know, I wanted to spend a day with him, a game day with him, and see, you know, what the stress is like, what, you know, what it's like for on the body, on the mind, preparing all day, you know, coaching a game. It was actually the first game that he called from the coach's box all season. So I actually got to be in the box for the whole game, which was fascinating to hear, you know, just everyone going a mile a minute, all the defensive coaches talking to their guys and special teams calling in and trying to track who's where on kickoff coverage and yelling out numbers. And then you've got Jerry Kill, you know, talking to his running backs coach and trying to get a read of his players on the field. And it was really fascinating, and probably even more so because it turned into a blowout, just to see how you, when you're down, you know, five scores, you know, how do you call the game? How do you approach things? And it was really interesting considering Jerry Kill's background, which is that he rebuilds places and that he turns programs around, which is part of the reason that drew him to this job, which not everybody would want to take, is that, you know, when it got to 49-0, when it got to 42-0, 56-0, which is the final, you know, the first thing, you know, there's some cursing going on from other coaches or silence from other coaches because they're just completely dejected. And then you've got Jerry Kill, you know, talking in the headset to his running backs coach, telling, you know, keep the young guys positive, tell them this is really good for them, they're going to get good experience, you know, just being super, and he's not always positive, but like in those moments, that was his initial gut reaction, which I thought was really interesting because he's been through this before. He's been through 56-0 games. And he brought up one of those to me that was like 58-0 loss to Michigan his first year at Minnesota. And I think you really weather a lot of things when you're turning around various programs, and he's prepared to weather them here at Rutgers. But, you know, obviously he had a seizure a couple of weeks ago, which was the first in 2 years, according to his wife. So, you know, he's really got to monitor his health and make that a priority, even as it's, you know, now we're going into week six of college football season, and this is not an easy time for coaches to take care of themselves. You know, it's sort of, even, you know, in his scenario, which, you know, nobody knows exactly what causes his seizures. He doesn't get any sort of feel that they're coming, but he does know that when he's not sleeping, when he's not eating right, when he's not exercising, and he's stressed, he's more likely to have them. So he has to be very careful about that. And everyone around him is aware of that and trying to help. I mean, there were people who were like, you know, making sure he had snacks, bananas, and things to eat during the day on Saturday. But it was just kind of fascinating to see just how much, if you love football that much, what you're willing to put right. Your body through and your mind through, just to be around that game after you had to step away 2 years ago. And he said that it felt like a piece of him died when he had to step away.
Well, it's a fascinating look into the minds of what you just said, a coach who, I mean, he's married to the game. He refuses to let, external factors, anything else going on in his life, keep him from doing what he loves. And I love the way that the story starts, because I know I can relate to that, and I'm sure many other people can, where, you know, he asked you, can you imagine giving up sports writing? And if that's something that you really love, and, you know, he loves coaching and he's able to, you know, manage his health and still be able to do it. And credit to Rutgers for, you know, being willing to take him on and understand that, you know, he may have some health concerns down the line and that there need to be a contingency plan in place for that. It's a really cool story. And the access that you guys have been able to get with some of these stories at the All-American is really, really cool. So I would encourage everybody to go read it, go subscribe. Like I said, around $5 a month to subscribe to that website. You guys are doing a really great job. You also have the podcast. So you do that with who else is on that? Max Olson?
Yeah, Max Olson and Chantel Jennings. Yeah. It's just called the All American Podcast. So you can Google that on or search that on iTunes. But we really appreciate listens from your podcast listeners who already like listening to college football podcasts. We have one as well. So I'd appreciate if anyone wanted to get that into your rotation too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you guys are doing a great job. So Nicole, we'll let you go. No 90s girls references today. So 0 for 1 on that. My bad. I'll prepare better next time. And we'll have a little bit something. You know, I know you love college football, but I try to get your 90s references in when I can. So that was, I dropped the ball.
Next time. Josh, thanks for having me.
All right. That was a lot of fun. That was Nicole Auerbach from the All-American. Thank you again to her for joining me. Thank you guys again for listening. Don't forget, on Friday, we will have Take the Points, the weekly gambling episode. The return of Rossi Three Stacks will get you guys ready for the weekend with all of the best picks against the spread. Love that episode. It seems to be everybody's favorite, so we'll continue to post that every Friday morning. It will be there when you wake up. If you guys have any suggestions, what you want to see on the website, questions for me, I'd like to do a mailbag episode soon. Would love to hear your guys' thoughts, hear your takes, anything you guys have liked so far, did not like. Send me a tweet, email me. On Twitter, I'm at Josh Parcell. Email me, cfbcountry@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you guys on Friday. Visit the website, cfbcountry.com. We'll see you guys on Friday. Peace out.